You're listening to a Castaway Media podcast. Find more great shows at castaway.media or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/castawaypodcasts.
You are very welcome to Bookish, an Irish books podcast with me, Bob Johnson of the Gutter Bookshop in Temple Bar and Dorking.
And me, Shane Brezen of Blackbird Books in Navan.
Remember, you can listen to Bookish online at castaway.media/bookish, or indeed that's where you can subscribe to get us monthly into your ear every single month. So on our Bookish program today, we will be talking some book news. Following that, we'll be talking about our book club pick for the month, which is Beetlebone by Kevin Barry. Following that, we go into Trilogy, the slot where we invite a guest in to talk to us about three books that they've either loved or have inspired them, or they just really want to talk about. We then talk a rediscovered classic, our second look at a book that may have been forgotten about but deserves to be resurrected. Then we'll do a quick roundup of some of the new books that have caught our eye this month, and finally, anything going on in the Irish literary world that we really want you to know all about. So kicking off first, we're straight into some book news, and I suppose the last few days have been very busy for book news, Shane.
Yeah, the Irish Book Awards, the Bord Gáis Energy Irish Book Awards, to give them their full corporate title, took place on Wednesday night. It was my first time I had attended the Book Awards. I think, Bob, you're old hat at this. Was it pretty much as expected?
Do you know, it's actually a great night. You know, one of those nights that kind of comes around, or you come around. This must be the fourth time I've gone, I think. And what always strikes me is you've got 500 book people all in the same room together, and it's like a huge book loving. It's a bit scary. Your eyes just get filled with people that you kind of know from writers, agents, publishers, readers, like celebrities. Everybody's in this big room together.
Celebrities. I was surprised how many celebrities. Yeah, there's a lot of people there. Yeah.
Do you know what? They upped the glamour quotient this year. I tell you, I swear, the people coming out, and especially the ladies were all gung-ho this year. There were some very glamorous looks on there tonight. It's a great excuse for people to get together and just celebrate books. It seems to grow and grow every single year.
Yeah, a big crowded room full of people who are much more happy usually in small rooms on their own. So yeah, it was
you do end up having some very random conversations though. I know we were talking to Sarah Baum, who was winner of she won Newcomer of the Year, didn't she?
She won Newcomer of
the Year with her book Spill Summer Falter Wither, one of the kind of the big Irish books of this year, and we had a great conversation about the best way to dispose of your bin bags. You know, this is the glamour.
I won't lift a lid on what you got up to in the early days of the gutter. I couldn't believe it. So yeah, the big news that came out. There's I don't know how many awards. Was there 10 or 12? There was a lot of awards.
I think there's
given
actually
out on the
14,
night.
If yeah, I remember rightly. Yeah. There's 14 awards given out on the night, including a Lifetime Achievement Award and an International Recognition, I suppose they're the two kind of the big kind of name awards. So the Lifetime Achievement Award went to J.P. Dunleavy, author of The Ginger Man, for his book. I must admit, I think he's about 90, I think.
I think he's 89, yeah.
89. Yeah. He still gave the best speech of the night. It was fantastic.
Did he? Because I was in the green room. We really don't know what happened in the main room.
You didn't get to see that bit. No, yeah, no. It was a weird thing. We got to hear the kind of the speeches, but then they left the room after us and went to see you guys in the green room.
Some of them did. Yeah, we were following what was actually happening on Twitter. that was the way things were in the green room. But it was we did see several of the award winners coming in and getting interviewed by Evelyn O'Rourke for the RTÉ show, which is going out on Saturday night. So this is if you're one of the early downloaders of Bookish, you may get to hear this in time to catch the Book Awards RT show, which is on Saturday night 28th at 11:10.
I think you can watch it back on the RT player as well. If you weren't there for Bookish the minute it went out, you can still go back and watch it on RT player, and I'm sure there'll be highlights available for anybody who can't get the player if you're away, as it were. I think it should be a good show to watch, actually. I mean, as I say, the glamour's there. There were some good awards on the night, good winners, and a good raft of things. And it's funny because these award programmes, in all honesty, they can kind of go on for hours and hours and feel a bit like a marathon. And it whizzed through, actually.
It seemed to, yeah.
It flowed very well. I think it's the best production they've done of one of these awards shows. And, yeah, it seemed to fly along. So fair play to the organisers. I think they did a good job. So I suppose we should talk about some of the winners on the night. So the Lifetime Achievement, so went to J.P. Dunleavy. Best Irish Published Book of the Year went to The Long Gaze Back, edited by Sinead Gleeson.
And well-deserved, yeah, fantastic. Now, there were a number of really, really brilliantly Irish... So that shortlist was as strong as it gets, I think, the Irish Published Book.
I think we've talked about this before, the fact that the Irish publishers really seem to have upped their game in the last few years. The brilliant production values, beautiful-looking books and great content.
Yeah, and I'm not sure of the kind of ins and outs of the criteria and various things, but like there were a number of other brilliantly Irish published books that were in other categories, and it's kind of like the GAA Football Awards at the end of a GAA season, trying to fit people into different pigeonhole people into different positions and various things. And I think the same thing kind of happens at the Book Awards. So there are books that could be nominated for loads of awards, but that's not the way it works.
No, and I must admit, I sit on the shortlist committee for this one. I'm kind of fairly heavily involved in my role as chair of the Booksellers Association in Ireland. So I sit on a number of committees for the Irish Book Awards. The shortlists are difficult. And what was fantastic this year was in every category you had kind of 7 or 8 people that you would love to see on the shortlist, and you had to cut it down to 6 for each. The children's categories, normally we restrict to 4 for the young children and 4 for the older. There were 6 in each this year because there was such good content to be had, and we couldn't cut to less than 6.
So. And there were 6 excellent, like any one of the books on almost both of those shortlists, I think would have been a well-deserved winner. Especially the junior category was really, really strong. Yeah. And the Irelandopedia, which won the Ryan Tuberty Show, the Listener's Choice Award, it is ostensibly a children's book, I suppose, and wasn't in either of those the outward children's categories. Some of the headlines that jumped out at me. We mentioned Sarah Baum already, who won the Newcomer Award for Spill Simmer Fall to Wither, and we've also already mentioned The Long Gaze Back. And the interesting thing is on that, The Long Gaze Back, celebrating Irish women writers, and the Newcomer Award, Newcomer of the Year Award, was the 6 on the shortlist were all young Irish women writers, which is great, really great thing to see.
And Novel of the Year was won by Anne Enright for The Green Road, who also stood up and during her speech, you know, made a point of noting the strength of women writing in Ireland at the minute.
That's the first I've heard of that.
The first I've heard of Anne Wright. You can watch it all on Saturday.
I'll watch it with fresh eyes on Saturday night. The Sports Book of the Year won by Jim McGuinness. I had a good chat with Jim on the night. Ghostwritten by Keith Duggan of the Irish Times. And I think it was always going to win that. I think it was definitely the best book on the shortlist. And I think anyone who has followed me on Twitter would know that I think that the two best Irish sports books of the year weren't on the sports book shortlist, but that I'm sure there are a multitude of reasons for that, and those two books were No Borders by Tom English, the rugby kind of history of the Irish rugby since the Second World War, and Dub Sub Confidential by John Leonard. So neither, they were two excellent sports books this year that weren't on the shortlist, but I suppose not everybody can get on there, and I don't envy you the task, Bob, of kind of whittling down those nominations.
No, I have to be honest and say that I abstain from the sports book shortlist.
So you can't
pretend that I would know exactly. But no, and there is also a point that to get on the shortlists, you have to be submitted by your publisher, and obviously not all publishers, you know, put in their submission. So.
And is there a cap on the number of books that a single publisher can put forward to a single award?
No, I wouldn't like to swear to him. Not as far as I'm aware.
Okay, honest, the reason I asked was the Penguin Ireland had two on the sports book shortlist, and John, the sub confidential by John Leonard was also by Penguin Ireland. So I was wondering if they had to put two forward.
I think everything is considered that's put forward through for the awards. I suppose with shortlists everywhere and for every award ceremony, sometimes it's the ones that missing which get talked about the most, you know. And I suppose that's something that will always happen because, you know, it's impossible, I guess, to always pick up those best books. It is worth mentioning that the overall Bord Gáis Energy Book of the Year is still open for voting. That's open for voting until midnight on the 17th of December. You literally log on to irishbookawards.ie, and out of all the category winners, you then get to pick the overall Book of the Year. So if you want to catch up on the winners, it's a good place to have a look, and it's also a final vote.
And just before we wrap on the Book Awards, two people that I would like to mention that won awards we haven't mentioned so far. Niall Breslin for the book Me and My Mate Jeffrey, and Joe Duffy from RTE's book Children of the Rising. And Niall and Joe spoke more passionately than almost ever anyone else in terms of their books and how important they were. It was almost a vocation that they had to get these stories out. And Joe Duffy's one is about the children that were killed in the Easter Rising, and Niall Breslin's about his long-standing battle with depression. So they spoke really passionately in the green room. So again, you see that in RTE or RTE Player.
Good stuff. I mean, in other bits of news, the only other one I was going to mention, Andrew McMillan, also, we're talking awards. He won the Guardian First Book Award this week. £10,000 sterling, not a bad amount to win. And it's the first time a poetry collection, his poetry collection is called Physical, published by Jonathan Cape. And it's one of those that actually it's been won by a number of Irish writers. Colin Barrett won it last year, I seem to remember, and for Young Skins.
Donald Ryan the year before, I think. So we had harvested that for a couple of years. Yeah. I think Sarah Baum was there or thereabouts. I think she was on the long list anyway, for that award this year. But I think it might have been too much to ask.
Ireland can't win it every year, sadly. But next year they'll be back. Year, yeah. So that's worth mentioning.
I don't know anything about the Andrew McMillan collection. I might dig that out at some point. To wrap up on news, the one other story that I saw definitely since we recorded our last podcast was that Amazon had opened a physical bookshop in the US.
I know, who would have thought? There you are, opening their own very own bookshop. They've obviously got a thing or two to learn about selling books.
it's an interesting one, and when I'm not sure if I'd like to be around the corner from it as as an independent bookseller. And I don't think they're going to be opening in Navan anytime soon. But it does. I think it is a very interesting move I personally took heart from it as a bricks and mortar bookseller that Amazon at some
Believe
point have said the decision,
doing.
To go into that space. Their collection or their selection in the shop is. They have curators that are curating them, so they don't have. It's not just a big warehouse where they have everything. They have staff, and just like maybe a bookshop would do.
Just like a real bookshop. I suppose the slight frustration thing that I have with it is that they don't need their bookshop to make money. Let's be honest, they don't need to sell books in that way. They don't need to. You know, they could make a loss every day, and it still wouldn't matter. So. It's like playing at bookshops for me, if you see what I mean. And I think it's a whole marketing thing for them. And the way I see it is marketing. For what I've seen at the bookshop, I have to be honest, I was a bit like, it's all right. Yeah, they face out everything in you know, book speak, you know, everything is faced out. Everything has its Amazon review rating, 4 stars, 5 stars next to it.
Which are all really believable.
All
the time.
Unbelievable all the time.
Because they can't be bought and sold. So you cannot sell or buy an Amazon review.
It just looked a little bit, all right, yeah, not particularly. But I suppose, you know, they're a newly opened bookshop. They seem to be saying that, you know, they want the whole bookshop experience. They've employed staff that are very positive and very, you know, interested in books. And as it builds, they will adjust their collection and add books and do it. So it'll be interesting to see. They've hinted it won't be the only one that they open. They'll be hinted that there's more to come. You know, it's always good to have another bookshop on the block, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe a case of watch this space to see where Amazon go next with that. Yeah, we'll wrap that up in terms of book news for this month. And we move on to our book club choice. So our book club choice this month was Kevin Barry's Beetlebone, and I think since we named it as the choice for this month, it's won the Goldsmiths Prize in the UK. I think that was since our last podcast. So the Goldsmiths Prize is a pretty recent addition to the awards season, I think. And it awards or rewards kind of innovation in fiction or kind of experimental. I didn't realize that.
I knew it had won the prize. I didn't know.
I don't want to misspeak, but I think that it's rewarding. Rewarding innovation. And Emer McBride, I think was it 2 years ago that Emer McBride won it for a Girls of Heart Form thing, which I think was. It felt a lot more experimental than Kevin Barry's. But to get into Kevin Barry's, there were elements to it, and there was a structure to it, which was all its own, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, having looked at the Bookish Podcast Twitter feed, we seem to be getting very positive responses from people who had read Beetlebone. I am a big Kevin Barry fan. I was really looking forward to reading it. And overall, I really, really liked it. I think it's a very accomplished piece of writing. There's a section in the middle, the Amethyst Hotel sequence,
to give a sense of what the book is. For those who haven't known about it now, and I suppose that might be very few people, but it follows John Lennon and over a period of time.
A fictional John Lennon
over a period of time in 1978 as he trying to rediscover his creativity, and he's hit writer's block and he can't get out of it, seeks out or tries to find his way to the island he bought in Clew Bay off the west of Ireland, the island called Derrinish, which I believe he might have spent, I'm not sure, I don't know a huge amount about John Lennon's life, so it's kind of been clouded by a lot of this, but I think he might have actually visited or been there at some point after he bought it. He bought it in the late 1960s, and I think he had some time there at different times in his life. But in the 1978, Kevin Barry's John Lennon, trying to find his way back there, to get remote for a couple of days to try and rediscover something.
My understanding is John Lennon in reality visited it twice, I think. First when he first bought it, and then he went over for a day at some point, and that was the extent of it. But as you say, this fictionalized account of John Lennon trying to get to his island to rediscover his creativity is kind of what makes up the body of Beetlebone.
Yeah, and you mentioned a little bit there in the middle that you felt didn't work as well.
I felt it worked, and I understand where it was coming from. It's all set in the Amethyst Hotel. John gets parked there for a few days to try to shake off some of the media that are kind of stalking him. It's an out of the way. It's an experimental kind of late 1970s society, all, you know, off their face on drugs, basically, and doing all kinds
of screaming.
It's lots of screaming and lots of, yeah. And do you know what? Listening to other people's drug stories is one of those things you just don't really want to do. And I can see it, but I can't pretend that I enjoy it. I found that bit a bit dull, it has to be said. But saying that, the rest of it, the first half of John Lennon racing around the West of Ireland countryside in a battered up old van and getting drunk in the pub and having all kinds of crazy conversations, fantastic. And I think Kevin Barry's skill is in those conversations and in those in that dialogue and just making it so believable and funny and clever and unique.
Yeah, and it is, and I did love it. I was talking to my wife Lorraine about it, Lorraine hasn't yet read it yet, and I was just trying to explain, like I said, it is insane. There are parts of this that are just completely insane, but it's very I don't know what the fuck literary fiction is, but this is kind of in that box. And it isn't like it's not for every customer that's going to walk into the shop. There's going to be lots of people say, just like, that's not for me. Yeah. But this is my type of book. I did love it. There's a huge amount to say about creativity. There's a lot, like, between Lennon the artist and Kevin Barry the artist, really. There's a lot of kind of overlap there of kind of getting to a place that you can actually create something, and the whole creative
process.
There's
a fantastic piece actually in the middle of the book after the Amethyst Hotel where Kevin Barry talks about his own experience of trying to recreate that journey in a way, both physically and you know, imaginatively of doing it. And it's just a superb piece of writing. And I think that's it. You see the craft of writing and the pain of creating something in this book.
And that bit is the bit that makes the book really unique. I think that's the bit that when it was probably about halfway through, and you get there and you go, it just puts you back in the, you're taken aback when you see that bit, and it's maybe 10 or 15 pages, wherever it is. But it's like it doesn't mention that it's Kevin Barry, but it is written with the personal pronoun. I assume that it's Kevin Barry or a version of Kevin Barry. Yeah. But again, like it's an amazing bit that's just inserted. That seems, it's almost like notes to a publisher in some ways of kind of, this is what I was trying to do and this is what I was trying to achieve. But excellent. On the whole, we've sold lots of it since it was published a month or so ago. I think it lost out to Anne Enright in the Book of the Year Award, the Irish Book Awards. And possibly part of the reason for that is that it's so new and a lot of people will not have got to it yet, maybe. And I think to me, this is up there with the best Irish novels of the year.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I read City of Bahan, which I didn't particularly enjoy. It wasn't my kind of book at all. I loved his short stories. I think These Are Little Kingdoms still remains my favourite piece of work that he's done. I think it's just a stunning collection of short stories. But you know what? I think Beetlebone's one of those books that's really going to stick with me. It's going to stay.
I think it will. It's interesting you bring up I would agree. His short stories, and this is very, very different to his short stories. Mm. The whole, as I mentioned earlier, the structure is so different. But the short stories are what made how Kevin Barry made his name, and they really are exceptional. And he had another one up for a short story of the year this year as well. But yeah, he's an exceptional short story writer, and I would agree. I felt that City of Bahan didn't connect with me. I felt it was a bit over the top in places, but it didn't connect with me as much as the short stories have. This one definitely has. And before we finish up on it, the one thing that kind of speaks to me about Barry, and we've spoken a little bit about Irish women writers and the wave of that's on the crest of a wave, the Irish women writing scene. That it feels to me that Kevin Barry is and this is purely personal, that he's a writer for men. That the short story, the great short story from a couple of years ago, the Beer Trip to Llandudno, a group of men in an ale club heading to the Welsh resort of Llandudno. And this feels the same. The male characters here are exceptional. The most standout character in Beetlebone, Cornelius O'Grady, the guy who drives Lennon around the place, and just an amazing the ear that Kevin Barry has to get to, it's pitch perfect, the conversations there. And I just felt that there seems to, he's a very male writer.
He's saying that the strong characters of male characters, I think. For me, he's a writer who writes for readers who loved push boundaries. You can see him pushing himself as a writer there.
Certainly,
you can see the pain he went through to create that book, and that's really interesting. I think a lot of women will enjoy the writing as well.
I don't know what you mean.
But I do think you're right. Yeah,
yeah, I don't say that I wouldn't be recommended to women. Yeah. Absolutely not. But he's very male writer. I feel, and there's a great conversation in Kevin has edited Winter Pages. Kevin and his partner have edited Winter Pages, that beautiful anthology of various things that came out recently, the first volume of it. And there's a conversation between Kevin and Tommy Tiernan in the middle of that, where he's going over a lot of the stuff that's in Beetlebone. But again, it's very much the two guys are like, it seems a very, very male conversation.
Yeah.
But also Tommy Tiernan said to him one stage that he doesn't feel that we're that Kevin Barry's a writer for Leinster people. So he's almost it's a West of Ireland kind of ethos there as well. So yeah, and the setting of this, of course, is West of Ireland too. But excellent. I'd be really recommend this.
Highly. A great read and a great pick, I think, for people to kind of read over Christmas, and a good book club pick for anybody who fancies going there with their book club. So we'll be talking another book in January.
We'll be doing a Christmas special, and we talked to you a little bit about that before the end of the show. We won't be discussing it. The book club that we pick now will be discussed in January. So what the book for the next January edition of Bookish is a collection of short stories by Danielle McLachlan, recently published by Stinging Fly. It's called Dinosaurs and Other Planets. Danielle had two stories published in the New Yorker before this book even arrived. So it's come with a lot of advance praise. I've only read one of the stories, so I'm looking forward to getting into that. Dinosaurs and Other Planets by Danielle McLachlan is our book club choice to be discussed in January.
Good. Well, that's it for the first section. We'll take a quick break now, and then we'll be back with Trilogy, where our guest gets to talk about three books that they have loved or have inspired them. So you're very welcome back to episode 4 of Bookish, and we're up now for what is seeming to be our favourite spot, mainly because Shane and I don't talk very much, and we invite a guest in to join us for Trilogy to talk about three books they either love, have inspired them, or they just really want to talk about. So our guest today is Vanessa Fox O'Loughlin, founder of Writing.ie, a website about all things writing, an invaluable resource for writers. Also from Inkwell Group, agents, like agent scouts, as it were. And also under an alter ego, Sam Blake, first book published in spring 2016. So a woman of many talents. You're very welcome.
Thank you, Bob. Very nice of you to have me.
So we've invited you in for Trilogy, and we like to kick straight in. You've come prepared with three books to talk to us about.
I have indeed.
Tell us more.
Okay, I brought them with me, just as a little prompt memoir. So I wanted to have a think about the books that, yeah, as you say, have inspired me, and books that I really absolutely love. And you so rightly pointed out, the first one is a very, very old copy of Rebecca.
I love this edition.
Yeah, it's I can't find a year now. I'll find it inside. It's actually
it has 3 and 6 written on the cover.
It does.
That's going to do it.
It's the war. Yeah. Price Unchanged in Spite of War. It's also written on the cover. Yeah, no, it is. It's about, I think it's 14th imprint of the first edition of Rebecca, because I've been steadily collecting them since I read this. Oh. And I absolutely adore it. To me, it's one of the books that every writer needs to read, because it combines everything. It's a thriller, it's a romance, it's multi-layered, it's literary, it's just beautifully written. And I remember when I first met Alex Barkley for the very, very first time, she came to do a workshop for me for Inkwell long time ago, and we were chatting before she got started, and we were talking about our favourite books, and it's her favourite book too. And amazingly, I've then discovered it was Noel Harrison's favourite book, and so many authors really, really adore this. So I just think it's an absolutely perfectly formed book. It's the one everybody has to read.
So it's one of those, as a writer, you admire the actual writing style, and is it the plot construction?
It's everything. It's the plot. The plot is incredible. It plays out. You have no idea what's going to happen. The twist is a real twist. Mm. But at the same, and it's written in a very sort of a page turning sort of populist type of a way. But at the same time, it's really quite literary, and there's lots of metaphor and symbolism and stuff that's woven into it that you just don't spot really necessarily on a first reading. So it's a book that you can read over and over again, and you'll get more from it each time.
It was one of those books I reread for our Classics Book Club a couple of years ago. And as you say, I hadn't read it since maybe I was a teenager or early 20s or something. And it's completely different than you remember. It's one of those books that, as you say, and stands up to rereading, which I think is always a good sign of a classic.
Absolutely. There's so many hidden levels to it. And it's one of the only books where I think the protagonist doesn't have a name. So we don't even know who the new Mrs. De Winter is through the whole of the book. And yet we find out so much. The Rebecca herself is so strong through the story, and she's not even in it. So it's just one of those remarkable books. You know, as a writer, when you're writing, you think about, you know, how much of a character you have to give and how much detail and the rest of it. And she breaks a lot of the rules, but in a fantastic way, and it's executed brilliantly.
Are you a Daphne du Maurier fan? Do you?
Yeah, I like some of the others too. I've read quite a lot of hers. I think this is absolutely stand out the best. It's a different league to a lot of the others. I mean, I love Cornwall, so I'm completely biased. Mm. I spend a lot of time in Cornwall, and there's a fabulous Daphne du Maurier festival on down there as well. In fact, I met her grandson, Kit, at an event down there too. So there's a real Cornish flavour to it, which is amazing for me. It's lovely, but you can read it. You know, you can read it from absolutely anywhere in the world. You don't necessarily have to be in Cornwall at all.
It's actually also a really good winter read, isn't it? It's got that, you know, crashing waves, storms, everything going on. One of those real fireside books.
Yeah, roaring fires, the whole lot. Yeah, no, brilliant characters. I mean, brilliant villains. And yeah, no, I just love it to pieces. I can't go on and on. It's terrible, isn't it?
Say all the things I love about Rebecca.
I should be more there constructive. But yeah, but I also collect them too, because I love old books. And so I started, when I read it first time, I started looking for early editions. I haven't got a first, they're worth an awful lot of money, but it's amazing because it's sold so many million copies over the years. There are loads and loads of different covers. So I have American editions and I have this edition. And actually I bought, Alex Barkley mentioned it in the Times the other day, I bought her a first edition, an early first edition in Cornwall when I was there for her birthday once. And you know, it's great, it's lovely, it's a fun one, it's a fun book. I get
it's
a lot
one to collect, as you say, because really there's a wide range and keep your eyes out, and ones that I presume crop up kind of in all kinds of places when you least expect
exactly
to see
funny
them.
Places and so I'm always going through secondhand bookshops, and there's an amazing secondhand bookshop in Falmouth, actually. I think they must get everybody calling in looking for early copies of Rebecca, but it's a really, really good one. And so have a good old hoof through there. But
and
no,
any idea how many you have?
How many? Oh, I've probably only got about 8, I'd say. Yeah. But I've sourced them carefully because I don't want to get duplicate copies.
Yes.
And it's trying to get them in the right condition to make sure they've got the dust jacket and, you know, all these things you'd look for.
And you want the special editions like this one that
exactly.
really say
yeah.
something.
There's not too much foxing and all these details. Yeah, there's a lovely American edition that I haven't got that I would love, with a burgundy cloth cover and lots of silver bits on it. But that I have to... I'm still looking for.
Saving for that one.
Absolutely. Me too.
So that's Rebecca. That's what's
indeed.
Up number two?
Okay, so number two would be a book that obviously I use professionally a huge amount. And it's Stephen King's book on writing. Mm. And when I'm talking to people about writing, I say to everybody, you should read this book because if you were interested in writing, or even if you're just interested in reading, it's an incredible book. It's part memoir, it's parts of manual how-to, but it gives you a really, really good idea of what the writing process is all about. It gives you an insight into Stephen King, but most importantly I always use it as an illustration of what voice is all about, because publishers are always looking for a unique voice. And I remember when I first ran a publishing workshop a long time ago, and Patricia Devey from Penguin was talking about voice, and I'm sitting in the back room thinking, what on earth is she talking about? What is this voice thing? And it's very much that thing, like on the radio, you know, if you can hear Michael Bublé and Adele singing to the same song, but they have completely different voices, obviously. It's probably a bad example because they're male and female, but you know, that's what voice is. And Stephen King, to me, when you read this book, you hear his voice.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah, so it is one that I've read, and you're right. It's almost, it's a practical guide to how to write, but actually Stephen King's storytelling just goes all the way through it.
Doesn't it? It's
time.
Amazing. Yeah. And you've come out of it feeling like you know him personally. Mm. I mean, and that to me is the what you're trying to do all the time. You know, you're trying to draw your reader into a book. And so, yeah, absolutely, his storytelling ability is there. And his own story of, you know, how Carrie got published, how he faced rejection. We were always talking about rejection in this business, because it is a business where there's lots of rejection, but it's something that you just have to go on with, really. Sarah Webb gave me the best advice ever, which was just keep writing. Yeah. So that's it, just keep writing. But he did that. And he got to the stage where he had a nail above his desk with his rejection slips on them, and he just keep putting them up there, and it got to the stage where he was absolutely in such a bad situation. His daughter was incredibly sick. I think they were living in a mobile home. It was just everything was just going horribly wrong and was ghastly when he first got the call that Carrie, there was a publisher interested in Carrie, and it had hundreds of rejections. Well, I think it was 50 rejections at that point. So it's an incredibly inspirational story as well.
Yeah.
And actually, he talks a bit about contracts and things in the book, and he didn't get the most ideal contract in the world for Carrie either. So that can be a salient reminder to writers to make sure they take plenty of advice before they sign contracts. But no, it's a brilliant book. It's great. It gives you tons and tons of tips. It really gives you an idea of what his life is like and is about. And I wouldn't be into horror particularly in terms of reading. So, I mean, The Shawshank Redemption is my most favourite film ever that was ever made. I could watch that over and over and over and over again. That was obviously based on one of his short stories. But you know, his writing wouldn't be necessarily something I'd go be mad about. But this book is just brilliant.
It's funny, actually, because the book podcast we've been doing, I say this is episode 4, and actually I think Stephen King's already popped up a couple of times, if you see what I mean. And I think it's interesting because he might be one of those writers that people are a little bit snobby about, you know, and I'm not saying you're snobby, book and you're recommending it, so you're not, but he is one of those writers I sometimes think gets looked down on. But I think the On Writing book actually shows what a craftsman he is and how knowledgeable about his craft of writing he actually is, you know, and the construction of books and, as you say, voice and how important things are. So, you know, I think it does give another side maybe to Stephen King that people sometimes underestimate. I mean, you know, he's a fantastic storyteller and, you know, that's a key to being a best-selling author.
Absolutely. When you tend to think about him, you think about the horror novels and stuff, but he's written such a lot of collections of short stories as well. So I actually went out when I finished reading this the first time around and bought one of his collections of short stories because I was dying to read the Shawshank Redemption short story. They're all fabulous too. So they're not all horror-based at all. So it's good that, he writes loads and loads of different types of things.
Good. So finally, for Trilogy, the third one on your list.
The third one is a book that I read when I was about 10, and it stayed with me, and I've spoken to people about it since, and it stayed with them too in the same way. It's a book called The Little White Horse by Elizabeth Gooch, and it's a fantasy. It's about a little girl called Maria Merriweather who goes to her parents die, and she goes to stay in a house, this amazing castle type house, and the thing about the book is that it's one of these ones when you're writing, and you know, when you're talking to people about writing, one of the keys to a good book is that it resonates with you long after you put it down. So it's like in the same way that Rebecca, you never forget those images from Rebecca, this is one of those books that you just never forget the images from. So Maria Merriweather going to this fantastic house, which I've now forgot the name of, is it Moonfleet?
I was trying to remember. I was looking at
Moon
it there
Acre.
And I was thinking,
Moon
I'm
Acre.
Sure
yes.
I read this a long, yeah. long, long time ago.
There's always the moment when you're on radio that you completely forget the name of everything. So anyway, yeah, Moonacre. But it's so she's going and she's driving in the horse and carriage, and she's with her governess. And it's just, that's a really strong image. There's loads of images through it. There's an amazing place in the stable yard of Moonacre where there is a glass house place with this little chappie who lives in it. And he has geraniums. He grows geraniums. Mm-hmm. And once you've read this book, you'll never look at geraniums in the same way again. He has these geraniums that are just coming out of his ears. There's hundreds of them, and the colour is beautiful, and you can nearly smell them in the book. She has a bedroom that has a circular ceiling and the stars painted on it. They're all images that, just as a child, it was just perfection.
I was going to say, do you think there's something, because when you ask people about their favourite books, quite often their books they read as children, you know, and they're books that have always stuck to them because they read them as children. Is there something... is there a reason there why we fixate so much on books we read as children? Why do they become our favourite books?
I think partly is, as a child, you've got sort of aspirations and dreams, and you haven't realised those dreams. And so when you read a book like this that is totally dreamlike, I mean, I've always wanted to have a bedroom with a star ceiling. I mean, ever since, with a fireplace in the corner, and a dog called, I think it's called Rolf, the big shaggy dog that has a good few twists in the story now. I won't reveal them because, again, I'd highly recommend anybody reading it. I think that it's all about... It's all about the world of dreams that you could have. This could happen to you, or, you know, it could be, it's amazing.
Yeah. I do think, as a child as well, you completely believe them. Totally, you know, yes. The most fantastical things, you know, I always think, you know, I loved the Susan Cooper Dark is Rising sequence, and I completely believed it was all true. You know, you've just got that facility as a child just to completely immerse yourself.
Absolutely.
And I think books do that as well. They really take you in.
Absolutely. And this one does. This is, you're sucked into her world with her, and you completely believe everything. I mean, it's brilliantly set up. So there's a couple of the particular character, the dog in it, there's a bit of a twist on the dog towards the end, we discover at the end, and then you when you see it, you're like, oh, why did I not see that when I first, you know, this girl walked in and there was this huge, big, I'll give you a hint, big shaggy yellow cat like dog sitting on the fireplace, and she doesn't realize that he's maybe not quite as much doggy as he could be. And you know, but it's amazing, it all fits together. It fits in, you know, there's a unicorn on the cover of this book too, so it's got unicorns in too. That's always a good thing.
Well, that's always a good thing, isn't it? Vanessa Fox O'Loughlin from writing.ae, thank you very much for joining us
thank
for Trilogy today.
Delighted.
And for picking three books which are very diverse but actually all very good and interesting and different.
That's it. And they all have twists, because that's what we like to read, isn't it? Yeah. As a crime writer, I love books with twists.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back. And this is the part of the show, Second Look, where we revisit a book that we feel was maybe overlooked or didn't get enough attention first time round. And this is Bob's month to choose. So, Bob, what have you got for us?
Okay, so the book I've chosen for Second Look this month is Jonathan Coe's What a Carve Up. I've chosen it because number 11, which is Jonathan Coe's 11th novel, has just been released and is a kind of sequel to What a Carve Up, sort of similar, you know, characters continue on in the new story. I've not read number 11 yet, can't wait to read it, because What a Carve Up is one of those books, when I read it, I adored it. And I recommended it to so many people and they all adored it. And actually, I think it was recommended to me by a friend originally who adored it. You know, it's one of those, it's funny, it's clever, it's topical. It was released in 1994. So what are we on, 21 years ago? It's a kind of, I don't know what you even describe it as, a noir farce kind of dystopian kind of vision, obsession. So basically, it's written by a writer who is writing a biography of what is obviously a mad sort of rambling aristocratic family. There's a batty older woman who is convinced that her brother murdered one of their other brothers, although he died in a plane crash. And it's just, it's one of those bizarre, looking at a family history, and they all go into, one of them goes into politics, one of them goes into farming. They're called the Winshaws, I said, the Winshaw family. And they kind of have a finger in every pie, as it were, of the modern world. But through that, he kind of looks at all the, you know, he dissects politics and how politics work. He dissects how contemporary farming works and battery farming and all of this kind of thing. And the art world, the health service, they're involved in all of these things. But the best bit about it, as the book draws to a close, all the different jigsaw pieces come together and make kind of this amazing conclusion, which it's just like, again, it's one of those books you just can't believe the construction of how it all leads towards the end bit. And it's funny, it's really hard to find funny books, you know funny books are never one of those things. So the title What a Carve Up, I think he's Michael, who's writing this biography, is obsessed with a film, What a Carve Up. It's one of those kind of old English comedies, kind of Sid James kind of film, so it all kind of ties up together. But yeah, What a Carve Up by Jonathan Coe, rediscovered classic. So, Second Look.
So it's the film within the book kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Books within films and films and things. And that's it. And, you know, I think everything comes around full circle. There's some crazy killer out there knocking people off. You know, it's great fun. It's a great book for people to read.
It's not one I've picked up. I'll be honest, I haven't discovered them yet to experience the delights of Jonathan Coe.
Yeah, I haven't read all of them. I've read most of them. He is a fantastic writer. I think his ability to construct books and construct plots just kind of leaves you in awe of somebody's kind of mental skills. So yeah, a clever but funny and very enjoyable, really enjoyable book to read.
Great. We're moving on, and we're going to enter the final wrap. I think we're almost there for everyone who's been with us for this the fourth episode of
Go Bookish. On, you're still there. You're
still there. Yeah, I think whatever minutes we're up to now. But thanks very much for sticking with us. New books this month, Bob. I know we've. Like it's the time of year where most books have been published now. The publishers have got them out there mostly by the start of November time for the Christmas.
That's it. So it's going into December. There's actually very little new stuff that's coming out. But I've tried to pick up a couple of things that I think may just get people's attention. There's a re-release of Carol by Patricia Highsmith, tying in with the movie that's just about. I'm hearing good things about the movie.
Me too. Yeah.
And this is the story of Therese, who's a sales assistant working in a New York department store, when a beautiful woman, alluring woman in her 30s, walks in. And it's a love affair. I think it was published as The Price of Salt originally. They've called it Carol to tie in with the film. And it's one of those, you know, it's a story of a love affair that was kind of shocking at the time. And I love Patricia Highsmith. I just love her writing. The other one a couple of others I really wanted to quickly mention, CJ McCanney's True Dublin, which is one of those kind of big gifty books of old photographs of Dublin and ties everything together. Just a beautiful, gifty type book, but kind of very nicely done. And a really weird one, Lars Mitting, Norwegian Wood, Chopping, Stacking and Drying Wood the Scandinavian Way. An entire book how to cut and pile wood.
With loads of illustrations.
Exactly, with loads of illustrations. No. It's a beautiful book, but do you know what? It's one of those books that you would think, okay, what is there to write about stacking logs, really? But there's something philosophical about it, you know? And I think it's one of those... It's one of those books you would give to somebody. It's a man's book. It's really hard to describe, but there's a philosophical kind of side to stacking locks. That's all I'm going to say on it. So yeah,
Best sheds.
Yeah, exactly. That's your man's Norwegian Wood. It's a nice big book on how to stack logs. What more could you want?
A couple of sports books to mention. Tony Ward's new autobiography has been out in the last couple of weeks. 12 Feet Tall. A lot of people are familiar with Tony Ward as a co-commentator on RT Radio and a great Munster and Irish rugby player of the past. He didn't win many caps for Ireland. I was surprised to learn. I hadn't known how few he had won. And in recent years, he's undergone a battle with prostate cancer, and he goes through that too. So that's been well received, I think. And the second captain's annual, the second captain's guys on the other podcast Over the Way, their first annual, which I'm really looking forward to. I saw some pages in the layout stage, and it looks fantastic. Some really great writing in there by Ken Early and various other people. But looking forward to that one as well. And again, with the Norwegian stacking logs and maybe 50 best sheds, it could be a good present for a man around Christmas time as well.
There you are. I'm very quickly looking forward to a couple of books I'm very excited for early January. John Irving has a new novel out, Avenue of Mysteries, and I know he's coming over in March next year for the Mountains to Sea Festival in conversation with John Boyne. I think tickets are already on sale for that. Love John Irving's writing. Felt like the last couple of novels could do with a bit more editing, but that's a personal thing. He tends to write sprawling type books anyway. Haven't seen this, but very excited. And the second one is the second novel from Rob Doyle, who wrote Here Are the Young Men.
Yes.
His new book, This Is the Ritual. Both of these books out, I think, 14th of Jan, and both should be really kind of interesting ones to keep an eye out for. So just having a very quick look forward to the start of January.
And prior to Christmas, we're wrapping up now. So I don't know have you got any events that you wanted to let people know about? It's manic shopping season now, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, we kind of call a halt on events for December, mainly because the bookshop's just full of stuff, you know, and you can't move all the stuff out of the way for the events. But we do every year, we do a mulled wine and mince pies night for kind of our regular customers and anybody else who wants to come along. So Cowes Lane in Temple Bar, Thursday the 10th of December from 6 p.m, and then in our Dalkey shop on Wednesday the 16th of December from 6 p.m. and come along, join us for a glass of mulled wine, and then once you're all nice and relaxed, you can come and do your Christmas shopping and spend a fortune. I'm ever so devious. I give you a mince pie and a glass of mulled wine, and then you're mine. So that's kind of our Christmas shopping evenings this year.
Just to give a quick plug for Blackbird Books as well, we have some Christmas themed events in the shop just in the week before Christmas. We have some dramatic. I'm really looking forward to this. We've one for adults and a couple of kind of matinees for children on the afternoons of the 19th and 20th of December, and they're song and dramatic readings of Dylan Thomas's Child's Christmas in Wales. So I have no idea what I haven't seen any of the rehearsals or various things, but it's some of the local drama group are putting that together. I'm really, really looking forward
it's
to
lovely
that.
To do stuff like that actually in the bookshop in the run up to Christmas. We always get a really good response, so I think as long as people come along and support it, I think it's a really nice thing to do.
Yeah, so we're going to wrap up for that. Just to give a quick mention of the various places you can seek out other episodes and updates on various things that are coming on. So the Twitter, get on, if you follow us on Twitter at Bookish Podcast, and the website where you'll find all the download links, subscription links for various podcast apps, iTunes, the whole lot, is castaway.media/bookish. And a final note about our plans for Christmas. So we've been kind of end of the month has been our time for Bookish. We won't be at the end of December.
I'll
so
be asleep on my sofa.
Yes, you will. Yeah, absolutely. Full of Cadbury his roses. And that's the sponsored content plug for this month. Yeah, so we'll be here in around about the middle of December. So look out for that. We'll have a kind of a year recap special. So we'll be going through some
of the books. I might even do my top 10 books I read this year. Fantastic. There's a feature for us, isn't it?
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, bring the mince pies in, exactly.
So that'll be around about the middle of December, 15, 16, 17, something like that. Look out for that. And that's about it for this month, Bookish. Thanks very much for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
This was a Castaway Media production. Find more great podcasts on our network. Visit castaway.media.